It's within your right, but you are a shitty 2008 Red Sox Yankees game in human form. You take 6.5 hours to do what could be accomplished in like 2:45 if you hustled a little.
Was that Carl Pavano time? Was that when he was on the Yankees? I feel like I could be Carl Pavano.
I'm usually like not jarred by baseball names, but I don't think I've thought about Carl Pavano in 3 years. That actually just like a little part of my brain reactivated. That's horrifying. Of There Is No Offseason Baseball Prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP Prospect Team editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett, Craig, welcome back to a regularly scheduled edition of Tino. How are you guys enjoying the TDGX draft so far?
I'm having fun. You guys having fun?
I like the pace.
I was going to say, Craig, could it have taken you any longer to pick? I know
it could have. Yes. I was allowed extra time. And yeah. Before I had to.
Your commitment to sucking joy out of everything you touch is truly legendary.
I don't understand why people get so... It's a slow draft. We agreed to do a slow draft, and then people get mad when a pick isn't made within 3 minutes.
No, You it's within your right, but you are a shitty 2008 Red Sox Yankees game in human form. You take 6.5 hours to do what could be accomplished in like 2:45 if you hustled a little.
Was that Carl Pavano time? Was that when he was on the Yankees? I feel like I could be Carl Pavano.
I'm usually like not jarred by baseball names, but I don't think I've thought about Carl Pavano in 3 years. That actually just like a little part of my brain reactivated. That's horrifying.
No, that's bad. That's bad. No one needs to think about Carl Pavano.
Oh God. All right. Well, it's been a little while since the last time we had a regular Tino. So we're only 4 or 5 weeks behind in our positional series now. But we are going to get through third base and shortstop tonight. And by God, we are actually going to get through both subjects because A, we're not talking about anything else. And B, we are holding Brett to a strict 25-minute time limit per position. So we'll go third base first.
He's heard that before.
Oh, this guy over here.
Booyah. It's going to be one of those podcasts.
It is going to be one of those podcasts.
I've heard of sex. So we're gonna start with third base and then go to shortstop. And this is the best time of year for me because even though I am the host in name, I do very, very little work, which is even by Tino standards, I do not a lot of work on these ones. So Brett, if there were proverbial keys, they would now be in your proverbial hands, assuming you didn't have hands.
No, I do have hands, so that is coming in handy right now.
Ooh. Yeah.
So. Third base, starting right at the top, my number one third baseman is Manny Machado. There's no shortage of elite third basemen this year, which is really fun. Do either of you guys want to make an argument for anyone else at number one other than Machado, or are both of you comfortable with him at the top, Craig?
I mean, I think Bryant is I think the top four are not that far apart. But I was talking a few weeks ago, kind of when the whole BP team was looking at rankings and for the third base position to JP Breen. And I was kind of thinking that you could make the case that Machado was a top third base guy in redraft leagues, too. Just because he adds stolen bases, whereas Josh Donaldson, who I think tops, doesn't. So, I mean, the risk is obviously health and just how his knees hold up. But if he can be, if all he does, if he doesn't get any better, if he replicates last year or close to it, I don't think there's much of an argument that he's the top third baseman.
Yeah, and I completely agree. In redraft leagues, he's my number one third baseman for 2016. He was Mike and I's top pick in labor a couple weeks back. I'm very high on Machado. Ben, are you in a similar boat?
Yeah, I mean, my initial inclination was to say that, well, if you want to go with upside, you could take Bryant, but I'm really not even sure that's true. So the more I think about it, unless you're really, really afraid of his knee injuries, I think Machado is an easy choice, is perhaps too strong, but a pretty solid choice for top overall.
Okay, so then let's keep moving down. Bryant was number two on this list last year before he had played a single major league game. He's two on this list now again. Let's have the same question. Is he above both Josh Donaldson and Nolan Arenado for you?
Yes. I mean, like I said, the four of those guys, I just don't see much difference between. But I do think he has the chance to hit 40 home runs consistently. And I know Donaldson also has that chance, but given the age gap between the two of them, not that Donaldson's old, but Bryant has a fair number of years on him. I think it's reasonable to put him second.
Ben, any additional thoughts there?
No, I would have Machado and Bryant. If you want to skip ahead, I would have Arenado third ahead of Donaldson because of the age gap.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I have Donaldson ahead of Arenado just because I'm not really a believer in the power holding up like this, and I think that Donaldson is the kind of guy who should be a legitimate first round talent for the next 3 to 4 years. He's not old enough where I think we should be worried about him falling off a cliff. And obviously with Arenado, you know, the Colorado guys still get bumped up, but in dynasty leagues, they get bumped up slightly less just because, you know, you never want to count on Coors production over the course of someone's entire career.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think Arenado is a 42 homer bat. Honestly, even in looking up his stats, I didn't know he hit quite that many last year. But I think that he could be legitimately a 25 to 30 homer bat for the next 5 to 6, 7 years. Whereas I think for Donaldson, you're probably looking at 2 to 3 years of that level of production. So, you know, in a 3-year ranking, I'd probably give the slight edge to Donaldson. But for Dynasty, the 6-year gap is enough for me to swing in Arenado's favor.
Okay. Look,
Brett, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
If Chris Bryant strikes out at 30% again next year, mm-hmm. where is he going to slot in among these guys in next year's version, assuming that they're all somewhat comparable to their previous production?
I think he might slot in the exact same spot.
Okay, so a strikeout rate that high doesn't bother you?
No, I think based on the kind of contact that Bryant makes, I think he can sustain a 30% strikeout rate and not be a sink in batting average. He's never going to be a guy who I think hits 280 or 290, but he could sustain a 260 to 270 average with a 30% strikeout rate, given how much hard contact he makes.
Okay.
I made this point on Twitter the other day. Bryant is on my short list of like humans I would most want to trade places with. Obviously, there are richer people and there are people who are better at baseball, but given how young he is and how good he is right now and how handsome he is and how much money he's about to make, is there a more obvious all-around choice for dude you just want to swap places with in baseball?
That's a really good question.
Think about his eyes. Think about how good you would feel every time you looked in a mirror.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think I can imagine that. Manny Machado
has that great tattoo.
he ruined it with the tattoo. You could make an argument for Machado before the tattoo.
Machado's a weird looking dude. Great player, but handsomeness was never gonna.
His ears are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not. Yeah. No.
I feel like there's someone. I feel like there is someone really, really obvious that I am missing. I mean,
Matt Kemp, but the age is.
But he's old. Yeah. He's
right. No, I know. But yeah.
I think it's Bryant.
I'm gonna keep thinking about this throughout the podcast.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
We're just going on. I mean, like, again, this is not a real answer, but you could throw out like Kevin Kiermaier in terms of looks.
He's
very talented, but you're not Chris Bryant talented, so it's not.
Why not be basically just as good looking and also better?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking out loud here.
I think you could make an argument for Noah Syndergaard.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think you could make, obviously not a shock. I think you can make an argument for Xander, who's pretty handsome. Not as handsome as Chris Bryant, but pretty handsome. Plays a more fun position.
So we'll continue to think about this throughout the podcast. But after the big four, I think we're all in agreement that there's a pretty severe drop off, and you really could make an argument for a number of people at five. My guy at five is Kyle Seager, and he's there because of the consistency that he's shown and the consistency that I think he's going to continue to show. I think if you want upside in the future, I think Sano is probably your guy at number five. If you want immediate 2016 production, if you're not down on him, maybe Todd Frazier could be your guy. Ben, who would be your choice at number five behind this tier?
It would be Seager, and specifically because there's no guarantee Sano will be third base eligible after this year.
In fact, there's a likelihood he won't.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a better way to phrase it. So if Sano was going to stay at third base, it would be a more difficult question for me, but because he's not, I actually don't think it's that hard. Kyle Seager is really fucking good.
He's
probably on the short list of the most underrated players in baseball.
Yeah, that's fair. Craig, does your agreement say that you're on the same page?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see another name. I mean, I agree with Ben. If Sano had even, I don't know, like a 50% shot of being there over the next 5 years, I'd probably take that. Just on the upside, but Seager's really good and he's going to be there. And I think there are fewer kind of issues with him than the guys coming up behind him.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about Sano. Given his question marks in both future eligibility and in, and I guess a little bit in his contact rate, how far apart for you guys are Miguel Sano and Michael Franco at this point? Craig?
I mean, if we're talking about like this year?
No, just not this year.
Okay. I mean, I think the positional value makes Franco, I mean, Franco essentially is that same kind of positional risk that we're talking about Sano if the Twins were willing to stick with him there, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I think that positional value is a fairly big deal. I don't know how, again, this goes back to, I don't know, a podcast we did like 3 months ago, apparently, but like when you say how far apart, like, what am I talking about? Like just spots on a dynasty list?
Yeah.
So if we're talking about, you know, just spots on like your top 500, I'd probably say somewhere in the range of 30 spots, just because I don't think Franco has a chance to be. I think Franco is probably like a 20 to 25 homer guy, and I would be a little surprised if he tops 30 with any consistency. And I think Sano has a chance to be a 40 plus type, at least for a few years. So I think that upside is a decent separator.
Yep, I tend to agree with you on that number. I think that's a pretty good number there. Ben, how much are you buying 2015 Mike Moustakas? We've talked a good amount about Moustakas on this podcast in the past, and really very little of it has been positive. However, in 2015 he was really good and showed batting average ability, showed a little bit power that he hadn't showed. Where do you think expectations should be for him over the next couple of seasons?
It's a really difficult question on your list. So you have Moustakas at 10, Devers at 11, Longoria at 12. I'd probably move him behind Longoria, who in his own right is definitely declining, and I'm aware of that. I think Moustakas is definitely better than he was in 2014 and definitely not as good as he was in 2015, which I'm aware is something of a cop-out answer. I guess if you're asking me what I'm more confident in, I think the power is closer to real than the averages, although I am impressed by how much he's reduced his strikeout rate over the past, really 4 years. He's declined in strikeout rate every year. So I think he could do something like, you know, if he hit 270 with 16, 17, 18 home runs next year, I wouldn't be shocked, but I feel like that's closer to his ceiling than it is his probable outcome, if that makes sense. I think there's a lower floor than there is a higher ceiling with Moustakas, who, even though he feels young, is already 27, which is young, but it's not, I don't know. For me, he always feels like he's still 24 or 25 in my mind.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. And I will also say that I'm going to die on Mike Moustakas' bad hill.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's certainly progressed to the point where he's definitely a starting MLB third baseman in my mind, but I don't buy the 2015 line.
Okay. So let's ask the opposite of this question. How much do each of you buy the 2015 line of Pablo Sandoval? Ben, we'll go to you since you are our Red Sox correspondent.
Yeah, it's not because of any of the weight bullshit or anything, but he has been in like pretty obvious decline for 3 years now, which is just fantastic news for me. So I think he's better than he was last year, but I don't think he's anything special. I could see, you know, 265 with 15 homers, something like that. I could see him flirting with a top 12 third base finish, but that's really a best case scenario. And he'll turn 30 this year, so it's not looking great. I always want to give players a little cushion, especially when they're changing leagues, and especially from the NL to the AL.
He's got a lot of cushion.
Yeah, ha ha ha. And this is like the least beepy thing to say ever. It's super not scientific, but as much as I like to shy away from the this city eats up this player thing, it is going really poorly for Sandoval in Boston right now. And we have seen this media destroy players like Carl Crawford before. It would not surprise me if this just really breaks down his confidence and he needs a change of scenery. So I am not very confident in a rebound for Sandoval.
Okay. Is it already Carl Crawford bad in Boston?
It's really close. It's been a pretty embarrassing time to be a Red Sox fan, just in terms of how eager everyone's been to attack the fact that he's fat. And, you know, if he was fat and good, no one would care. Look at David Ortiz, especially from a few years ago. But it's really bad. And the thing about like Sandoval is he's sensitive. He was sensitive in San Francisco. We knew that about him. He didn't like the Giants being on him about his weight. And now it's like 14 times worse. So, you know, if he comes out in April and hits 350, this is going to go away really fast. But if he comes out in April and hits 200, I think it's going to get really, really ugly.
All right. Craig, let's talk about Adrian Beltre for a second. Beltre has been a high-end performer at third base for a long, long time now, but is getting to the point where even though his performance is still staying reasonably high, we are collectively starting to get concerned about when the shoe is about to drop. How many more seasons do you think Adrian Beltre has left of top 15 third baseman performance?
One and a half. I mean, he's going to be, what, this is his age 37 season.
I think he turns 37 at the beginning of the season, right? Or
yeah, he's 2 months away from it. So it's, it's right as the season starts, April 7th. So that's what I'm saying. So like, once you start getting up that high, and look, I want to believe that, you know, Adrian Beltre will be Adrian Beltre forever, but he's gonna, well, I think this is his last year in Texas, or at least that he's under contract for. And I think that playing in Texas certainly helps him out a decent amount. And sure, you know, he could find new life or sustainable life as a DH potentially. But, you know, last year could have just been a blip, or as good as he was, it was a substantial drop off from the previous three seasons. And I just don't know, you know, how many 37, 38 year old third basemen are there?
There are, I believe, none.
So
I think he is the oldest player on the entire top 50 third baseman list.
Yeah, I believe that. I would absolutely believe that, and I think there's a good reason for that. And you know, do I hope that he's the exception to the rule forever and ever? Yeah, absolutely, I do. But I don't anticipate that'll be the case. And I think, you know, top 15 is not a super aggressive threshold to set for him. So I think he can attain that this year, even if he misses his standard number of games or, you know, whatever the case may be. But beyond, you know, 2016, I'm not willing to even go a full season, just because it's unlikely that he either remains at third base or remains good at third base, you know?
Okay. So we'll continue going down the list. Ben, what are you more comfortable betting on? Yasmani Tomas getting better from a performance standpoint, or David Wright staying healthy?
Oh, I mean, Tomas, but that's not really an endorsement. Like, I really like David Wright. I love watching him play. I wish he could stay healthy, but I'm not, what is he, 32, 33 with degenerative back issue?
Yeah, I believe he is 33.
Yeah, no, my money is on Tomas getting better, even though, you know. I mean, I really don't know what to make of Tomas, honestly. I've just stayed the fuck away from him in every league because I have zero. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. If he had a top 10 finish next year or was out of the league by mid-2017, I would be like, yeah, that's about right. I have no idea what to do with him.
Yeah, there's a very wide range of options there.
Come to me for all your fantasy baseball advice. I have no idea what to do with this player.
Similar question for Craig, but for different players.
Thank God.
Yeah. What are you more comfortable betting on? Nick Castellanos reaching some semblance of his upside as a prospect, or Justin Turner sticking in a lineup long enough to hold serious long-term value?
That's tough for me for a different reason, in that I actually like both of them. And I think you're light on this list. You have Turner at 20. I think you're particularly light on him, even with the missed time. I mean, he was still a 16 homer bat and hit 294, 370, 491 when he was in the lineup, which is, you know, substantial production, especially given the position. So I like both to happen. I guess right now I'd say Castellanos is a little more likely, just because Justin Turner's already, he underwent knee surgery this offseason and is probably going to miss a little time. So I guess just on the sheer strength of Turner already planning to miss time, it's more likely that Castellanos will reach some semblance of his upside, especially since that's a really nebulous way to put it. But I like both to do what you ask of them in this sense.
Okay. This question I am going to ask both of you because this player was involved in a trade between the two of you in TGX.
Oh, yes.
In 2017, Danny Valencia is a top what third baseman? Craig.
I'm going to say 15.
Ben?
That's fine. Like 18 to 14 range sounds totally right to me.
Okay. So are you guys both pretty confident that he's going to play out the full season in Oakland as their third baseman?
No.
No. I think he'll get enough games to qualify at third base, which is like that's what you say entering 2017. They don't have another decent third base. I mean, he's not a good defensive third baseman, but they don't have another decent overall third baseman on the roster. So, I mean, I think he's easily going to get 20 games there. And once that happens, as long as he hits, he'll be a top, you know, 14 to 18 type third baseman.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm not, I don't know. It's really, the Valencia is entirely based on contention window. Like Craig is trying to win the next year or two. He makes sense as, I don't know, a pretty inexpensive play with decent upside. And for me, he's really not someone I want to be invested in if I'm not going to compete in the next year or two. So I took scraps for him and turned one of those scraps into Billy McKinney already. So I don't know. I think Craig and I have the same valuation of Valencia, which is like, yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I really liked him as my corner infielder, and I think there's a decent possibility. I mean, my third baseman in that league is Pablo Sandoval, so I think there's a decent decent chance that he outperforms Sandoval.
Yeah, and you have to remember, I was sitting on Lonnie Chisenhall, so I had to move Valencia to make sure that Chisenhall could get at bats.
Sure, he's exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, an embarrassment of riches for me at third base.
All right, so let's keep going down. We'll do a little lightning round here, unless these are any players that you guys want to dive deeply on. Ben, if you had to pick one of these prospects, who would you take, Jomar Reyes or Austin Riley?
Jomar Reyes.
Okay. Craig, there's a glut of third basemen that are not particularly good. From 26 to 33 on this list.
Oh, if you only 26 to 33, I see.
Well, after that, they just really suck. But if you had to pick one of these players to be in the top 20 of this list next year, who would it be?
Oh, that's rude. That is really rude.
I feel like there are only two answers here.
Garen Cecchini. Right, Ben?
No.
Oh, wow. I thought you were holding on to it. No, I mean, Jake Lamb is the obvious one, right? He's 26. He's ranked 26, and he's young, and he was, you know, pretty productive in Arizona. And I think the only thing that would really stop him from really even attaining that ranking is if like Brandon Drury outplays him and he just doesn't play or something like that. I don't see him failing to the point that I actually think he's pretty good. I think he's the obvious one. And honestly, I don't know who Ben has in mind for the second one, but I think Yonjervis Solarte doesn't have that far to go. I don't know that he'd ever rank in the top 20 in a list like this, but he could probably produce in the top 20, if that makes sense. Like he's never the guy that you plan on having, but he's a decent hitter. And he will probably produce a top 20 season at some point in the next couple of years for third base.
That makes sense. Ben, who was your second person?
For me, it was Chase Headley. I mean, just, we have like, I guess 20s sort of pushing it, but like Valencia is 5 spots ahead of Headley, and if Headley has a better year than Valencia, you're probably going to rank him next year above him. Headley's not that old yet. He has another year to adjust to the AL. I mean, he's not a great dynasty bet, but third base blows. So I could see him being right near, closer to 20 next year than 30.
Okay. Is there anyone outside of the top 33 that doesn't suck, Craig?
Yeah, well, I mean, currently, no, but I think there are guys, you know, you have a lot of prospects down there that could be something down the line.
I do. So which prospects do you like? Are there any prospects at this portion of the list that are particularly interesting to you?
I mean, I think, you know, anytime you're talking about Tyler Nevin was a supplemental first round pick in Colorado. Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting. he's not the guy, you know, like a few years ago, I latched onto Ryan McMahon really quickly. I don't have that type of interest in Nevin, but you're talking about a pro ball player's son who should be able to adapt pretty quickly. I don't have a ton of information on him, but I think, you know, again, you're talking about a guy in the Colorado system and he has a decent chance of sticking at third base. So, that's certainly interesting. And I think Renato Nunez is probably the other name that's somewhat interesting there. I know that he's kind of, he was somewhat of a name that was consistently picked on as overrated for a little bit, but his transformation last year as a hitter in terms of chopping off significant number of percentage points off his whiff rate while maintaining a power profile is a relatively big deal. And he did it at Double A. So if he can repeat that type of success, you're talking about a pretty interesting guy. I'm skeptical that he can, but if we're talking about, you know, someone in the 40s, that's not a bad flyer to take.
Agreed with Craig on Nunez. I don't like him. Only for a TGX size league, I still think Colin Moran is a little underrated. I would have him, high praise. I would have him over Hunter Dozier. So I would have him all the way at 47 instead of 50. Brett, you are a monster.
I am.
Did you put Middlebrooks at 48 only to spite me?
I might have.
Yeah.
In the world of really fun CBS draft room projections, number 38 on this list, Adonis Garcia of the Braves.
Oh, I saw that today.
Is projected for a .276 average and 25 home runs. So,
oh my God.
If you're into that, you know.
Did they let his dad make the projection?
I don't even think his dad would be that optimistic.
What the hell?
Yeah,
it's wonderful. It's really, really wonderful. And it's not like they're like high on third baseman in general. Chase Headley is pegged for .255 average and 13 homers. So he's pretty much a double Chase Headley.
That's a great nickname. I'm sure B-Ref is probably now going to run with that for Adonis Garcia.
Double Chase Headley.
Much like Dexter Daddy Long Legs Fowler. What the fuck is that? Never. It's like never been said. Use that. No, I don't believe you.
I haven't. Okay.
Yeah, you're wrong. Brett, how do you feel? How do you think Enya feels about third base?
Pretty depressed.
Welcome back to episode 65 of Tino. I hope you use that break to reconcile your feelings about Enya and your feelings about third base. So with that comparatively lackluster position out of the way, which indeed is what she said, we will now move on to the Dynasty shortstop rankings, which is a more interesting endeavor. So Brett, here you are.
So shortstops, as we'll get into down this list, shortstop is a little bit stronger than we are used to seeing. It doesn't quite have the top tier that third base has, but the top tier at shortstop is pretty strong. And it starts with Carlos Correa, who burst onto the scene this year with a very surprisingly strong performance as a rookie. I mean, there's really no consideration to anyone being number one on this list. But Craig, where do you have Correa overall in dynasty leagues? Is there anyone between Correa and Harper and Trout for you, or does he need to show more in order to get there?
We had this conversation, I think, on the last episode of Tino that wasn't specifically a drinking game. And I think somewhere, you know, you've got Goldschmidt and Correa, in some order. And I don't know. I think I said I'd have him fourth overall. Does that ring a bell, that conversation, or do you want to have it?
Yeah, again? No, it rings a bell. I think we were arguing between Machado, Goldschmidt, and Correa.
I think that's right.
Brett, in terms of what you said, he's not in the Harper Trout tier for me. I mean, it's Trout, Harper, Gap, Correa, Goldschmidt, Machado in some order. I think is what you meant. But
yeah, I was not inferring that he was part of that tier. There is definitely a gap.
So you think Correa is better than Mike Trout is what I'm getting.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Okay. Good.
So Ben, Xander Bogaerts, what do you think the trajectory of his power looks like over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons?
Better. I think he can easily. So this is like, it's really interesting because he changed his swing last year, but he doesn't need to swing hard to generate insane natural loft. So it's not like he has to reinvent his swing again to start hitting for a lot of the natural power that we saw in 2013 and even a little bit in 2014, even though he had a down year. So I believe he had 7 homers last year or 9 homers. Let me look it up. It wasn't a lot. 7 homers last year, yes. So I could easily see him upping that to, I don't know, the 14 to 17 range this year. And then routinely rounding into, you know, the 20 to 25 range by the time he's at the ripe old age of 25 or 26 or something like that. So, he doesn't match Correa's pure power output. I don't think Bogaerts is going to routinely be a 30 homer guy, but I think we're going to have a very long stretch of years with his homers in the 20s.
Do you think the batting average drifts back as the power drifts up, or do you think he can match it?
No, it drifts back, but I think it drifts back to like 290. In my eyes, Xander's true talent level is like 290, 25, 100 RBI, 100 runs, something like that. So I don't think he's quite the 320 hitter he was last year when he had a 370 BABIP. But like I said, you know, 290. And for right now, he can also tack on, you know, 10, 12 steals a year too.
Okay. So now same exact question to Craig, but on Corey Seager. Seager's number 3 on this list. He was very impressive in his short debut last year. Where do you think his power trajectory goes over the course of the next few seasons?
That's kind of the million-dollar question, right? Because he could – I think he's the type of guy that could, if he wanted to – this is – I'm going to sound like one of those people that was like, Ichiro could hit 25 homers if he wanted to. Like it's that easy. But I think he could – he's a skilled enough hitter that if he – wanted to trade contact and batting average for power, he could make that transition over a number of seasons. And so if he wanted to be a 30 plus home run hitter, I think he has the ability to reach that ceiling. Not that he could snap his fingers and do it. But I think the likelihood is that he's more of a 20 to 25 homer guy. And that's kind of at his ceiling. But I think he's going to hit, like, I honestly think he's going to hit like 300 plus most of the time. So he's really damn good. And the fact that he's very reasonably third on this shortstop list behind two guys who are barely older than he is it's freaking incredible in terms of the talent at the position at this point.
Yeah, this is an ungodly top 3.
And it is, and I don't even want to cut it off.
I would say.
I don't want to cut it off there because I think I think Addison Russell, despite being on the Cubs, as much as it seems impossible to underrate someone on the Cubs, I think Russell is being underrated because he's not one of the top 3. And I think he has the potential to be just as talented as either Bogaerts or Seager. He just hasn't showed it at the major league level yet. Does that sound crazy or are you on board with that, Craig?
No, I completely agree with that. I'm a huge Addison Russell fan and believer, and I'm dying for him to get out of the nine spot in that lineup, because I would really love to see him get more at bats. And I think he's the middle of the order hitter, even potentially on that team. I think he can hit for power from shortstop, which, you know, despite the guys above and even around him, is generally not something you find very easily. And I don't know. I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter. I think he might be more of a 270 guy, but I firmly believe he can like slug 500 for several seasons in his prime. I think he's really, really good.
Yeah. So Ben, let's jump over number five and go. Whoa, to number
six. I want to go on Russell, because I don't agree.
Okay, go ahead.
I think he's super good. Don't get me wrong, but I don't see the same type of average potential with Russell as I do with Bogarts or with Seager. And Russell also hasn't really run, quite frankly, at all in either of the past 2 years, which what to me was always a little part of his prospect profile coming up, was he wasn't going to be a burner, but he'd be able to at least contribute a little bit in that category. And that's hasn't been the case to date. You know, he's so young that it could be the case while he's still young and he has decent speed. Maybe he gets better. But to me, he is noticeably behind the top three guys we spoke about, to the point where, I don't know, I probably would take him over Tulo, gun to my head, but I'd have to think long and hard about it.
Okay. Let's skip over Tulo for a second and go to Francisco Lindor, who's number six on this list. Do you, Ben, agree that there is a gap between the top four and Lindor as far as future value goes? And if you do agree with that, what is the thing that keeps Lindor from being in that group?
No, I think it's the top three, and then I think it's Russell and Lindor in terms of young prospects, and I do prefer Russell to Lindor. What holds me back, honestly, not to like cop out answer, I think your caption on the Dynasty top 50 list is perfect. Yeah, I think it could be 320-20 in his very best years, but I think most of the time he's going to be more, you know, 280 to 300 in 15-15 or something like that. I mean, he's awesome, and I think he's super, super safe, which is really attractive to me. I think he's safer than Russell. But I agree that I think his upside is being a little oversold because of how strong his debut was.
I completely agree. He's, like, I mean, 12 homers in 99 games is just wholly unexpected.
Yes,
for him. And I mean, I was the guy who on this podcast for a couple years was saying, you know, I really believe he can hit and I don't think it'll take him that long. And this was like 160% of what I thought he would do. You know what I mean? Like I saw him in Double-A and I was very convinced that he had the bat to ball skills that would translate to, you know, hitting at the major league level. And that's fine. But I was thinking like 260 to 275, and 275 would be really pretty successful. Instead, he was a 12 homer, 12 stolen base guy, and he hit 313. I mean, you know, Ben mentioned 280 to 300. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 270 to 300. You know, as good as he was and as well as he makes contact, I don't know that the contact is always going to be as hard as it was this year. And, you know, I don't know, even for a guy with his wheels, that, you know, a 348 BABIP is ultimately sustainable. That was higher than any BABIP he had posted in his minor league career since 2011, when he played five games.
Yeah, and BABIPs don't generally go up when you go from the minors to the majors for a whole host of reasons.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I just think if you bring that down to, even if you like him above league average, you know, in the 320 range, it's a substantial difference to his batting average because of how much he puts the ball in play too.
Okay. So let's jump back really quickly to Tulowitzki for a second, just because he's the guy who clearly doesn't fit in here with this group as someone who's older than 23 years old. But how much of a concern was 2015 for Tulowitzki's prospects going forward? I mean, he was always the guy who you said, if he just stayed healthy for 150 games, He would be hands down the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he did, and he wasn't. So Ben, what do you make of him going forward, and how much more down are you on him now than you were at this time last year?
Well, he only stayed healthy for 128 games.
Yeah,
that feels like a lot, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's
126 in 2013, 143 in 2011.
It's basically he's every other year basically. Yeah, stays healthy.
He's the anti Giants.
Right, exactly. How much more nervous am I? Not really. I mean, this is just too low. I don't know. He's going to usually play about 3/4 of a season. He's going to be good. I think he's better than a 280 hitter. I think that'll tick back up closer to 300. I don't think he's a 30 homer bat anymore. I think that will stay around the 20 range. And I think he can do that for another 2 or 3 seasons before we start to see it really drop off. So, you know, I said I have to think long and hard about him, Russell, and Lindor. I think it's really just contention cycle. You know, if I was you or Craig, I'd prefer Tulowitzki. If I was me, I'd rather have Russell or Lindor in terms of TDGX contention cycle right now. But I think he's a fairly easy top 3 shortstop for at least the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Craig, I'm fully aware that the answer is the answer is somewhere in the middle, but what player do you think Jung Ho Kang is closer to? In the first half, he hit 268, 348, 384 with 4 homers in 253 plate appearances. In the second half, he hit 310, 364, 548 with 11 homers in 214 plate appearances. Which version of that is closer to the truth going forward?
I mean, if I'm going to pick one, I'm going to take the first half. Just because I think the idea that he can slug 550 and that being closer to the truth, I don't think that's reasonable. And I would also point out, you know, like 268, 348, 384, that was a 732 OPS, which from your shortstop is just fine, really. I mean, it's not great. You definitely want to see a little more power. And like you said, it's going to be somewhere in the middle. But if those are my two extremes, I'd probably say he's like 65% more likely to be the first half guy.
Okay. That makes sense. Ben, who do you prefer between Tim Anderson and Trey Turner?
Ugh, I hate you. I've gone back and forth on this in my personal ranking so many times. Turner, because I think he's a better bet to stay at shortstop. But sounds Jesus, good. it's close.
Can I interject and go back to something really quickly? On Tulowitzki, are you concerned with him? Because he had a relatively marked drop off in walk rate and a rise in strikeout rate. He is as good as a place to hit as Rodgers is. It's not Coors either, you know.
Yeah, and you know there is an adjustment period when hitters go from the National League to the American League, and I think he saw, huh?
I was agreeing. Yes.
Oh yeah, I think he saw that adjustment when he went to Toronto. So I definitely don't think he's the guy who Toronto saw last year. But the walk to strikeout thing is concerning because he's. He's someone who as recently as 2014 had almost a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk rate, and for that to spike to 3-to-1 in 2015 in just one season is certainly concerning. But you know, considering that you know most leagues don't use on base, and he you know he still hit. He hit 17 homers. His performance didn't fall off the table. There's just some concerning signs. I agree that I'm pretty comfortable saying that he is a top 3 shortstop in 2016. and possibly again in 2017 if he shows that his brief time in Toronto was an adjustment period or a little bit of a fluke. But yeah, there's definitely a little residual concern behind there.
So I would just like to point out though that it's worth noting that the decline in walk rate and the spike in strikeout rate started prior to the trade. And so I just think that's worth noting in terms of his career. You know, he hadn't been a over 20% strikeout guy in his entire career. And last year he was at 21.3% on the year. And if you split his seasons in half, you have first half and second half, which is close enough for the trade. Even in the first half, he was a 21% strikeout guy and a 6% walk guy, which is, again, well below it's like 3 percentage points below his career average. So it's the degradation of those underlying skills has me more worried than kind of even the rate production, like his slash line or his raw numbers, just because this is a guy that we're worried about breaking down, you know, consistently. And if those underlying skills are going too, it's even more concerning.
Yep. I agree. So let's move a little bit further down the list. Ben, how much of Brandon Crawford's 2015 do you think he can carry into 2016, particularly from a power standpoint?
Half of the games he made. So he had 10 homers in 2014, 21 last year. I think he's in 15, 16. I don't really buy the overall improvement last year. He actually walked less than he had in previous years. Strikeout rate was about equal, just a big jump in power. And to be fair, he was 28, but, you know, I don't know, 250 with 15 homers. Does that sound about right to you guys?
Yeah. I think 250 to 260 with 15 homers, I think is pretty reasonable.
Then again, it's an even year and it's the Giants. So,
right. So I'm sorry.
So 315
and 35. Yeah.
Yeah. If he struggles.
Yeah. Craig, this question comes up a lot now with dynasty drafts, but they're right next to each other in this list. Dansby Swanson or Alex Bregman?
I for me it's Swanson and not particularly close. I seemingly am the low guy on Bregman. I didn't know that. I guess until I saw other people come out, you know, and express their opinions about him. I know the consensus now is that he's likely a shortstop. I'm not sure that. I mean, obviously Correa is in his way at this point, but I don't know that necessarily would have been the case anyway. And I'm not sure that his offensive profile translates to fantasy particularly well. I don't think he'll be bad, but tell me what the standout ability is.
I think the standout ability is the ability to do kind of everything. There is no standout ability.
Yeah, and so I don't know. That's just not that. It's not going to be at shortstop if he stays in that system. And I don't know. It's not doing it for me.
Okay. So does the next guy?
If you had to comp him to a MLB guy, who would it be?
If I had to comp him to an MLB guy,
just production.
That's a good question.
Just like offensive profile.
Yeah, I would say a slightly lesser version of good Brandon Phillips, like 80% of good Brandon Phillips.
What if I said, okay, I don't even love this because I think it might oversell his speed, but like 2014 Josh Harrison, that's actually way too good. He's not going to be a 315 guy, right?
He could be a 300 hitter. I think that's in range. I think Swanson's a little bit more likely to be a 300 hitter than Bregman is, but I think they both have it within range.
Okay, so I mean, for me, just Swanson, I think has a good chance to be, you know, 285 plus, 15 plus homers, and I don't know, what, 15 plus steals, something like that. To me, it's a little bit of a more dynamic skill set, but Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. So what about the next guy on the list? What are you expecting this year and beyond out of Ketel Marte, Craig?
I'm really intrigued by Marte. And he came out, he hit really well last year in 57 games, and I'm not exactly expecting that type of production, which was he hit .283, had 8 stolen bases in 57 games. But the two categories I mentioned are the two categories I expect him to play well in fantasy leagues, and that's average and stolen bases. And he did well enough everywhere else. He's not going to be a home run guy, but on that Mariners team, I think he has a decent chance to hit at the top of the order. Their lineup isn't bad, especially at the top of the order. So if he is, you know, a one or two hitter for them with Cano and Nelson Cruz behind him, I think that's certainly going to help him out in runs. And I think he can get on base even if he's not going to be, you know, so like I said, he hit .283 last year. If you think that's optimistic, that's fine. I think if he hits .270, he's still going to get on base in, you know, 33-34% of his plate appearances. And if that's the case, you have him there to run and to score runs, and he's going to be able to do that as long as he gets on base, which is something I think he can do. He's done it the last several years, and for most of his minor league career.
All right.
Do you disagree with that?
No, I really like Marte. I think
he's a CP option this year. I wrote my target on him for shortstop.
Yeah, I think, you know, given the strength, given the overall strength of this list, I thought that was a reasonably aggressive placement. Maybe you don't think it was aggressive enough, but I think putting him in the top 20 is a statement of appreciation for Marte.
I think in this block makes sense with from Crawford to Castro, but I probably would have had him, I don't know, at least ahead of Swanson and Bregman, maybe Crawford.
I could see that. I could see the argument for that. Yeah. Ben, it's been a long and bumpy journey with Starlin Castro. Now that he is in New York, what do you think that there is still a reasonable chance that he becomes some semblance of the person that prospect Hounds thought he would grow into 4 or 5 years ago?
I mean, yes, because he was in 2014. It's not like he hasn't done it or he's super far removed. And he's, what, 25, 26? Going to a great ballpark, great contextual factors. So, yeah, I mean, the thing that bothers me about Castro is, like, the lack of consistency. I don't ever know if he's going to be someone that you can super bank on a year-to-year basis. But I definitely think he can be, I don't know, a top 7, top 9 second baseman for quite a while. I mean, he seems to me to be fully capable of hitting .280 or better. You know, maybe the power never really came into it like we thought he would. But 15 homers, I don't think is out of the question. It's a shame he doesn't run anymore, and that does indeed hurt his value. But maybe not the uber version of Castro that we were all praying for when he was a prospect, but pretty damn good.
Yeah. Well, now that he's going to be playing second for the Yankees now, it's hard to unsee. I think it was Kevin Goldstein 5 years ago that said that he could grow into Alfonso Soriano.
I don't see that power.
I think that was the high end of optimism back when he was in the minors for what his power could turn into. I think there's still room for him to be a 20 homer hitter, like in the 20 to 22 range. But that's probably going to be it for him.
Yeah, I think that's optimistic, even getting to 20. I mean, he's never hit more than 14. But then again, like we said, he's also really young. So I really like Castro. I expect to target him pretty frequently this offseason in drafts.
Yeah. So let's go a little bit quicker through the next group of names. Craig, you had mentioned when I put together this list that you appreciated my Jorge Mateo ranking. Are you still as incrementally more excited for Mateo as you were last year? Is this linear, the excitement?
Yeah, well, I mean, he hit a triple in spring training today, so I think obviously he's going to be fantastic. Spring training stats are very important, and they matter to me a lot. But I think Mateo is – I think he's a better bet to stick at shortstop than he was previously. I mean, obviously, he performed well in the lower minors and in his first taste of the lower minors, and that was a somewhat – major obstacle, and as it is for a lot of guys who get their first taste of full season pro ball. And so I think his ability to, you know, maintain his production and his prospect status while moving up a level, I'm not surprised that he's experiencing, you know, a little more love this year. I think, you know, last year, I think in the BP expert prospect mock, I took him in the 10th round, and I think what this year he was like a 4th round pick. Part of that is because the upper minors emptied out pretty quickly, but it's also a recognition that someone with his speed and the ability to stick at shortstop is a really big deal. I mean, would you say he's significantly different than let's say Trey Turner, but you know, 2 years lead time?
I think he could do more damage on the base paths than Trey Turner.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think he's who I wanted Roman Quinn to be.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, 82 stolen bases last year, and certainly, you know, lower minors catching and pitching is a part of that. But, you know, That's a big number, and even if all he does is hit 260, with, you know, I don't know, if he hits 260 and then slugs, I don't know, 390 and can run, he doesn't need much more than that to be an impact player in fantasy.
Agreed. Ben, how out are you on Gene Segura at this point? And does the trade to Arizona do anything for you in either direction?
No to the trade. In terms of how out am I? I mean, I could still see myself investing in him as like a middle infielder or as a shortstop in like a TDGX size league. I mean, I think he's a top 20 name, but I don't think 2013 Gene Segura is ever walking through that door. I think he's just, I don't know. What's a good analogy? Like the Rajai Davis of shortstops, like useful for a stolen base total, but that's really all you're going to get.
Okay. Craig, where do you think that I am selling the major league offensive upside of Orlando Arcia short on this list?
I mean, I don't think your placement is bad, but what are you envisioning that put him there?
Like from a production standpoint?
Yeah.
I think he could hit 270 with like 25 steals.
I think you're a little light on the average. I think there's a decent chance he's, I don't know, like 285 plus. Not immediately, but overall. I think he's got a really good knack for finding the barrel, and that's going to show itself in his batting average. And I think the steals are about right. But I don't think you're underselling him on this list in terms of placement.
Okay. A little bit further down on this list, there are two players who were kind of underratedly decent last year, but both are heading into 2016 without starting jobs. In a TDGX style league, Ben, which of these two players would you feel more confident hanging on to for future value, Wilmer Flores or Jed Jerko?
For me, it's Flores. I mean, he is maybe not substantially younger, but he's a few years younger than Jerko. I don't think Jerko is at all a good bet to stick at shortstop, which it doesn't say a lot about your defensive skills when I'm saying you're a worse bet to stay at shortstop than Wilmer Flores. But overall, you know, even though I think he's probably going to be a maybe second division starting second baseman, I do think Flores can put up a decent average and hit 15 home runs or something like that over the course of a full season. So I don't know. I guess my hope for Wilmer Flores is he becomes like 85% of Neil Walker or something.
That's fair. Craig, what are your offensive expectations for Raul Mondesi at this point?
That's a really tough question. I think in the next three-ish years, you're talking maybe like, I don't know, 245 to 260 batting average and a bunch of steals. But I also think he's someone who could add to that batting average somewhat significantly over time. I mean, he's so, so young, and they've been unbelievably aggressive that I don't think it's really easy to quantify like the type of development we could see from him at the big league level in the next few years.
Ben, is there,
you don't sound happy with that.
No, that's more or less in line with what I think. I mean, I think his value is going to come from the fact that he could steal 30 to 40 bases, but
yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Ben, is there anyone, this is a more interesting list than the back of the third base list, but is there anyone in the back sort of 15 or so that jumps out to you as someone who you either just like or think is being undersold in this range?
Oh boy. In the back 15, you guys have really turned me on to Wilmer Defoe, and he's down at 43. I don't know how much higher I'd have him. I don't know. I'd have him above Lara. I think you could make an argument for him as far as maybe right behind Nick Gordon. Other names, Simmons might be a tiny bit low. I don't think he's a very good hitter, but he's pretty young and has shown power in the past. That might be all I've got. I'm sort of out on Daniel Robertson, and I don't think he's going to stick at shortstop long enough to matter. Chris Owings has broken my heart. I don't know. Craig?
He might just be broken.
That's true.
He might be.
No, I'm not entirely out on Owings, to be honest. I think he's – I don't see a place for him kind of going forward in Arizona necessarily. They seem to want to play Nick Ahmed at short and shift Segura over to second, which leaves him without a spot. But I, from what I've heard, that his shoulder injury to his non-throwing shoulder was fairly substantial and wreaked kind of havoc on his swing and his ability to swing as he normally did. And so I think, you know, what we saw last year was not necessarily a reasonable representation of his skill set. The complication is that what we've seen from him over the past several years is not, you know, none of that is good enough to really matter. So I'm not entirely out on the talent, but I think he's a somewhat interesting guy. And I guess Eugenio Suarez is someone who's going to get a lot of playing time at third base for Cincinnati this year. And I know Brett's a bit down on him, but you know, he's an everyday guy in Cincy, and he might not have the power he showed last year, but I think he's probably, you know, in a 20-team, 18-team league, he's definitely, you know, starting material at, you know, at the back end of shortstop to me, or even, you know, at the front end of middle infield.
Sounds good. So with that, Ben, I will hand the keys back over to you.
A little stumped on a possible Enya kick out here. If only someone had an extra Enya kick out they mentioned earlier during a break that they could use.
Well, it seems so abrupt now.
Well, do you think Manny Machado could become a shortstop eligible at some point in the next couple of years?
Why would you bring that up, Brett? Also, no.
No. Yeah, fair. No, me neither.
Speaking of Manny Machado,
would you rather have
a tattoo of his wife or of Enya?
Enya.
Enya.
episode 65 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. The top 10 lists of prospects per organization at BP are coming to a close very shortly. I believe there are only three left. So be sure to check them out in the coming days and read the entire series. Chris Crawford and the rest of the team have done great work. The annual positional series at BP is about to come to an end as well. We are embarking on relief pitching, which is a totally valid and good use of everyone's time. So please make sure to check that out next week on BP as well. Please rate and review us on iTunes. You guys are hysterical, and every positive rating helps us. And if you have any thoughts or feelings, reach out to us at Tino Podcast on Twitter or through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Craig. You and I really need to decide which one of us is going to make CDs up. Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
Does your freezer have like an ice maker, or do you have to like freeze?
No, I have to freeze ice like a poor person.
No, me too. And I was about to make a drink, like literally at 9:10, I was like, oh, I'll make a drink before Tino. And then I got up and realized I have three different ice trays and they were all empty.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I am extremely deflated right now.
No, I'm pretty committed to the ice tray rotation game. So I don't usually have that issue. If you put your alcohol in a freezer now, you could probably have it after the break.
Yeah, well, I put the ice in. The alcohol's already in the freezer. It's vodka. I just leave it in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the ice.
Right, it makes things colder, usually.
Yeah, I enjoy that aspect of ice specifically.
Yeah, that's one of the ice's main calling cards. If I had to pick.
Yeah, Basically, if I have to narrow it down to two, it's that it makes things colder, and also it's a measurement of, like, how you want a dick when you want to insult someone.
Yeah. I mean, the dick aspect of ice is a very solid secondary offering, but I think the carrying tool is definitely the temperature.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's. Okay, I mean,
so we agree on. Yeah. We agree on. That's good.
The functionality of the dick temperature is really majorly affected by the temperature overall.
Exactly. Yeah. It's ancillary, but not the main show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Because if you were like eat a bag of tepid dicks, you'd be like, well, why? You know, isn't that just a dick? Exactly. Aren't most dicks tepid?
They don't call him Daddy Longlegs for nothing.
Damn it, George.